The Mark Reardon Show.
I am for defunding the police, and for me, it's a reallocation of funds.
It does not appear she has made any reasonable efforts to prevent the resulting chaos.
This didn't work out.
The Biden administration knows what it needs to do, and it says, well, we'll do anything except what works. It's a special kind of stupid.
God save the Queen, man.
This is The Mark Reardon Show.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be here with you again on 97.1 FM Talk. I always enjoy these times together, and I got to tell you that it was kind of fun watching all the behind-the-scenes people trying to orchestrate to get everything done in time.
Yikes.
And producer Kyle, I got to say, we didn't get to talk a lot before, but if I had some audio I wanted to play in this segment, would you be able to do that? You can nod to Sue and Sue can tell me yes or no. Okay,
yes.
That's a nod.
He said,
Sue,
yeah.
How are you, Sue?
I'm great, Ryan. Oh, it's great over here. How you doing?
Good. I got to tell you, what's the old phrase on days like this? I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue.
That's right.
So, Sue, there's a segment. I want to bring up a story at the end of this hour with you about P. Diddy Combs. Mm. I don't know if you saw this story, but his realtor's like, oh, boy, this is going to be a hard sell for his house.
Yeah,
so I want to get your perspective as a realtor.
Oh, gosh.
What's it like to sell a house? And I think the quote from the realtor was, you better use a black light on it first.
Wow.
Gross. So we're going to do that later. But last night, Vice President Kamala Harris did this town hall meeting with Oprah. And to me, it was such a strange thing to watch because what it looked like was, hey, I'm Kamala Harris. I wish I can go back in time and be on the Oprah show back in the day. Well, wait a minute. I got a lot of money from campaign donations. I'll just like pay Oprah to show up and create a fake set to make it look like the Oprah show.
How bizarre.
And then everything will be great. Did you get to see any of it last night?
No, uh-uh.
That's okay. We can play some audio from it. And part of it, too, was they had celebrities call in. Can we play the Meryl Streep clip, Kyle? That'd be a good one to start off with.
Sends one in the air.
That's Meryl Streep. If she can knock one out of the park, that would be impressive.
President Harris.
Yeah.
Yes. From my mouth to God's ear. And hello, Oprah.
Wow.
Okay, that was Meryl Streep. Can I just say something real quick, too? I know I shouldn't be like this, but all the different celebrities that showed up, I started thinking to myself, I'm going to start enjoying them less the more they do things like this.
Yep.
And I that's not the right way to think about it. I've gotten so, like, turned off by all of this that my wife bought a Ben and Jerry's ice cream that had Stephen Colbert on it. And I said, what are you doing buying Stephen Colbert garbage and bringing it into this house? Even if it's just a flavor of ice cream. I'm like, oh, I'm so turned off by all of this now. And then they did the, let's do the role of celebrities. Like we're going to surprise you, like on the Oprah show, like she's surprising the audience with a car. And to me, I didn't get anything out of it. I only watched a couple of clips and listen to some of the things. There's one thing she said about being a gun owner that stood out to me. Can we play that clip, Kyle?
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Sorry. Yes, yes. I hear that. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that. But my staff will deal with that later. Yeah.
Okay, they act like it's not orchestrated or that was a planned moment. Number one, she's not shooting anyone. Secret Service would be the one to do something like that. What are the odds she's never handled a gun or fired a gun in her life? I would say 90% odds, if I had to guess.
Maybe.
I'm going to guess that it's her way of saying, hey, don't worry, I will not take away your guns because, look, I'm one of you. I'm a gun owner. I'll shoot an intruder that comes into my house. But the exact opposite is true with the policies that we know would happen if she were to become president of the United States. Do people look at this and say, wow, she is so relatable. There's so much joy. There's so much love in this presidency.
I don't know.
Everything is kumbaya moments with her. But in reality, it's the complete opposite.
I think that they just don't want to look at the policies, and people just will get swept away by, yes, I'm just going to focus on that, a nice smile, and she says things that are pleasant. I just don't think they want to take a close look, because if you do, it's not tolerable.
All of it is just so phony. Like, the set is phony.
Yes.
Bringing Oprah in is phony. Getting the lines in. Oh, they're not going to like this. Oh, we'll have to deal with that later. All of it is just so phony. I find that to be true. But here's some of the takeaways. By the way, there's some polls that have come out recently, and I'm having a hard time trusting a lot of these polls as well because they're all over the place. And what you find in polling today is the reality of what's going on in the streets doesn't match the reality of some of these numbers that are coming out there. And I don't know if maybe I'm a little bit sinister, but I'm going to throw this idea out. I feel they use polling as a way to motivate their base. So they purposely try to make it look like Kamala Harris is down or something in some of these polls because they think it's going to be a way for them to be like, okay, well, you can't stop sprinting when you're this close to the finish line, to try to motivate some of their base to get out there and tell them, hey, this is going to be close. You can't get lazy now. You got to go out there. You got to vote. You got to do early voting, things like that. I feel like there's some manipulation that goes into these, some biases that go into these as a way to try to change the outcome in a way. And what we saw in 2016, the polls were completely off. They said, what was it, 95% chance of Hillary Clinton winning. And obviously that wasn't true. In the last election in 2020, it looked a lot closer. Things were really strange towards the end of the night when you saw these big increases of numbers that popped in and people were scratching their heads and they're saying, now, wait a minute, how could this be? And then you see the presidency of Joe Biden and you wonder, wait a minute, if they would have known what you're seeing right now, would this have been the same outcome? They're able to see this sort of outcome, and they talk to people on the streets. And what you find now is that there's a bigger demographic of people that are just tired of what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris has offered over the years, but it doesn't reflect in the polling. And I just don't understand why. Either they are purposely asking the right people and trying to bring only certain voices out there as a way to try to put their thumb on the scale of the outcome of what could happen towards the end. Either that or this polling is completely wrong and we need to just throw it all away. Plethora of polling has emerged in the past couple of days. I was looking at an article on The Hill that said it's better to be Harris than Trump slightly. Another takeaway was Trump has plenty of reasons for hope. It says his supporters need not to be too worried about these findings in the latest polls. If he's down by a point or two, it says it's tough to separate the signal from the noise. And part of the thing I always wonder, it's going to come down to these swing states and the electoral votes. So it doesn't even matter on a national scale what some of these numbers are. Should we only be focusing on Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania? That's really where a bulk of everything that you want and where you're going to actually win this thing is going to sit. I don't know. Sue, when you look at these things, are you even concerned? Do you even look at them? Do you even care about the polling?
Well, I hear it, obviously, because I work here, but I do not go dig it up. It's just too unpredictable, and sometimes it's frustrating. So I think, well, I'm just going to wait to see what happens. There's nothing else I can really do except go and vote.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is to go and vote. Can I tell you something else? This is what I find. Like, sometimes I'll watch, like, clips online. Okay, what did Greg Gutfeld say the night before? And did you see he had his highest audience ever with Donald Trump?
I'm not surprised.
The interview from the other day. I'm telling you, if I had the opportunity to see it, I would want to see what was underneath that bandage, like Greg Gutfeld got a chance to. You want to hear some reactions to this town hall? Vivek Ramaswamy, do we have that clip that we can play, Kyle? This is part of the reaction to the town hall last night with Kamala Harris.
People were just hungry to have their voices heard. They've been told to basically shut up.
Oh, this is different. I'm sorry.
Too long. And I think people were just hungry to be heard. And
this is his town hall. Kyle, I apologize. I got it mixed up with Kamala Harris. That's his town hall, Vivek's town hall that he had. It was what was going on with some Springfield residents and things like that. I got it mixed up. I think that Hugh Hewitt had a reaction to the Kamala Harris interview. Can we play the Hugh Hewitt one?
The vice president's like an old jukebox with only six bad songs in it. And whether you hit MacArthur's Park or Imagine, it's always bad. It gets worse with repetition, even when she has, as her wingman, the country's greatest communicator, Oprah, along with Rush Limbaugh, the only person to build and maintain an audience of 20 million people daily for years. I can't believe how bad the vice president was last night, and I hope a lot of people saw it because I want Donald Trump to win.
Worse with reputation, now worse with repetition, excuse me. Would you call Oprah the greatest communicator alive right now? People do still look at her that way?
I
thought that
sure
was something
10
years ago,
yeah.
20 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, it's been a while.
What does she communicate? She just does specials on her channel once in a while. She doesn't really do much in line like this. This is kind of a, hey, I'm guessing she got paid how much money? $5 million, $10 million to do that last
night,
if you had to guess?
Probably.
$10
million? Yeah.
I would guess it was somewhere along those lines. She ain't doing it for free. And if there's a probably, you know, a question if she was doing it for free. Some of these other celebrities that called in, I guess there's a chance that they were using that as like an in-kind donation for Kamala Harris. I just want to get your gut feeling on this, because I think a lot of people are kind of burned out and they realize that, hey, you know, the repetition of the same thing and no policies ever being said by Kamala Harris are starting to get old. Tell me what's more interesting to you, the town hall last night in the Metro Detroit area or this Chinese zoo that is painting the dogs to look like pandas and trying to play them off as pandas? What's more interesting?
Yeah, at this point, it's the dog pandas. And I know
Isn't
that's sad. But yes, because, you know, they're right. It is the same thing over and over and over again. And there is no policy. And what's really annoying is that no one on the left seems to care. And so they trot it out and they do it over and over again. It's very frustrating to watch.
I think that's part of the strategy. You want to lay low, realize that the less they know, the better it is for you, which isn't the greatest thing. But maybe that's part of the, hey, I'm just getting tired of this. Maybe we need to play into that mindset. They want to go watch the dogs that look like pandas and the Chinese zoo that admits that they're painting dogs to look like pandas. That's more interesting to you. Okay, good. I don't care. Then don't worry about this town hall. Go vote for Kamala Harris. Maybe that's their strategy all along. I'm just so turned off by all of it. There was another thing. Let me play one more clip from this town hall yesterday. And this is Kamala Harris with Oprah. What changed in you? Because here, I think the irony of all of this is that we need to understand that there has to be some sort of stated policy to reference an older policy to understand there's a change. But when you don't have a reference point, that's...
It seems to us that something happened to you the moment Joe Biden, President Biden, stepped aside and withdrew his candidacy, that a veil or something dropped and you just stepped into your power. I mean, literally, looking at you at a speech like the week before, which was a great speech, very nice. And then the next week, I saw you walking in the thing. And I said, what happened to you?
You know, we each have those moments in our lives where it's time to step up.
Time to step up.
Time to step up, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. It's just so phony. All of it's just so phony. The life we live in. You know, politics are phony. You know what part of growing up is, Sue? And, you know, I don't want to make this sound like it's a negative because I'm not meaning this in a negative. But, Sue, you're older than me. Mm-hmm. So you have more life experiences. You've gone through more presidential cycles. You've seen more when it comes to the way politicians act. One of the true moments of growing up is realizing that all politicians are bad and all politicians are phony. And part of realizing is the best policy is the one where they leave you alone and not mess with you.
Yeah.
And I think when you're younger, you might get wrapped up in all of this and you might love the singing and the dancing on both sides, Republicans, Democrats, they all love the song and dance a little bit. Then you get a little bit older and you realize all of that is worthless.
Yep.
When I know what's going to come after, and what's going to come after is they're going to sing and dance, and they're going to Harlem shake into my wallet, and then they're going to take everything I can. They're going to shake me outside of a balcony upside down by my ankles until everything falls out, and they're going to take what they can grab.
Yep.
That's kind of the game of politics. And you realize, okay, I'm done with the song and dance. I just want to find the person that is not going to mess my life up the worse.
Yep.
And I look between these two candidates and I can say, yeah, you have a Donald Trump who might not be the greatest personality of all time, but I don't feel like I am going to drive myself to bankruptcy with him. And I turn it around and the country is, I mean, our national debt is through the roof. And I keep thinking about more and more and more they want to add on to it. And I think, oh, man, that's the party that wants to shake you upside down until they can grab everything that falls out of your pockets. And I don't want that.
Ryan, has Kamala Harris addressed the fact that those Trump tax cuts are going to end? I mean, has she said what she's going to do if she were in office?
No, I think they allude to it in some ways. They say, oh, Donald Trump did this and that. But I think it's very simple follow up to that, which is, you know, you had the opportunity to extend them if you wanted to. You decided not to because you look at it as a way to score some political points. So all it needed was an extension. If you really believe they should be doing that, then you were in power to extend it. You decided not to. But you're blaming Donald Trump because a lot of these bills they put in have sunsets. Almost everything they pass when it comes to bills, have some sort of sunset put into it for taxes or anything else like that. So it's not unusual for those sort of things. It's normally the person in power at the time then decides if they're going to extend it or not. In this case, they decided not to. So they're calling it a Donald Trump tax, when really in reality, it's them deciding to allow the taxing to happen. And it had nothing to do with really Donald Trump in that point. You know, we got to go to a break, but I got to tell you, I don't know. And Hugh Hewitt might be right. It's worse with repetition because all you're getting is the same thing from her at this point. So maybe it will backfire. It looks like it's fun and maybe it's a good way for the hardcore fans to really enjoy Oprah. But in the end, I don't know if that's going to sway any voters. And if that was their goal, not to sway voters, then mission accomplished. Joining us after the break is a spokesperson for the Federation of American Immigration Reform. And really, there is some problems going on with that. So we're going to talk to Ira right after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be with you today. You can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, at Ryan Recker. I think we got things settled out. It's always fun when there's changes that go on in the background and people are scrambling. And it adds a little bit of hectic nature to it. But it in the end, you become better people for it. Joining us now, a spokesperson for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
All right. So we heard a kind of interesting tidbit from Jerome Powell when he came out and he mentioned, okay, we're going to cut interest rates by half point. That's a pretty big deal. And when talking a little bit about the economy and rising unemployment and some of the contributions for the rising unemployment, you know what? How about this? Let's just play the clip from Jerome Powell, producer Kyle. Can we play that for our guest? I think he's pulling it up here. No, maybe he doesn't have it, but that's okay, Ira. What we can do is say that Jerome Powell basically said rising unemployment, part of this has to do with an influx of people coming into the country looking for jobs. Now, I spoke to a labor expert yesterday, and part of what he said was, well, the type of jobs that they would be taking anyway are not really high-paying jobs, but yes, you're seeing that. Can we talk a little bit about how you would look at that for the Federation of American Immigration Reform? What kind of impact are you seeing with the influx of people coming into the country?
Well, look, just the law of supply and demand dictates that it is going to drive down wages. It's a myth that Americans won't take certain jobs. They won't take certain jobs if the pay is poor. And one of the things that influences the pay scale is the level of immigration coming into the United States. If there are people coming in who are prepared to take these jobs at much lower wages, then the employers turn around and say, hey, you know, no American will take the job. And that's not true. They just won't take the job at the wage that is being offered. And Chairman Powell, you know, what's interesting about Chairman Powell's remarks the other day is he wasn't even asked about this. The Fed generally doesn't weigh in on political issues. He was simply asked about unemployment. He volunteered the part about the role and the impact that immigration is having. So, you know, when the chairman of the Federal Reserve steps up and he raises the issue, that's something that policymakers ought to be taking seriously because it is affecting the livelihoods of many Americans.
What do you think that number is, the amount of people that have entered the country illegally since the start of the Biden administration? Because I've heard some other estimates right around 10 million. Do you have a number in mind?
10 million is the number of encounters. Not everybody has made it into the country. You know, the estimate is somewhere around 7 million. And most of these people are not legitimate asylum seekers. These are people coming looking for jobs here in the United States because even a poorly paid job in the United States is better than the pay that they're going to get back in their home countries. You simply can't absorb that level of illegal immigration without having an effect on the labor market generally. But that's only part of it. In addition to illegal aliens, we still take about 1 million people a year through our legal immigration policy. We take about another 1 million people a year and bring them in as guest workers, even though many of them are aiming to stay permanently. So we are flooding the labor market with a lot of foreign workers. And again, the law of supply and demand dictates that that's going to drive down wages. And since our economy is not keeping up in job creation, we're not creating jobs fast enough to absorb both the American workers who want to come into the labor force and all these foreign workers. It is, as Chairman Powell said, it's affecting unemployment and driving it up.
I've heard these other instances of what normally happens at the border when it comes to these encounters. And maybe you can tell me if you're hearing this, seeing this. So if we go back to the Trump administration, there was a, hey, stay in Mexico policy, meaning that as opposed to you waiting for a court date, which you may or may not show up to or may get lost in the system, instead, we're going to find a way for you to stay in Mexico. So he talks to the leaders and essentially says, if you don't start keeping them in your country, then we're going to raise tariffs. And then all of a sudden they said, okay, we'll keep them in the country. Earlier this year, Joe Biden did something very similar. He went and said, okay, we need to, you know, he probably said election year in some way in his mind. But, hey, we need to stop this because we're having so many of these different encounters. It has been running so wild. We need you to do the same thing. Mexico balked. Joe Biden said, okay, we'll pay you. And, I mean, we're talking tons of money. And that's why we've seen a drop recently in encounters in illegal immigration into this country. But in Mexico, what they're doing is they're essentially shipping them further south and they're holding on to them in what's been described as like a Gaza Strip situation. Is that what's going on in the southern border?
Well, that's part of it. You know, although the president's order back in June is a little overblown, they're still allowing a lot of people to come into the United States, make asylum claims and being released into the United States. But we shouldn't have to depend on a foreign government, much less one that we have to cough up billions and billions of dollars to get them to do it, to control our borders. That is our responsibility. It's the president's responsibility. Look, Mexico can change its policy anytime it wants, and the flood will start again. As you pointed out, this probably has a lot to do with election year politics. All those people coming across the border look bad on television. It's driving down the approval ratings for this administration. But once the election is behind us, Mexico can say, that's it. You know, we're done with this, because it does impose a lot of problems on Mexico. If they're going to have lots of people congregating there, it affects their economy and their country. So, you know, we cannot count on Mexico to do this indefinitely. What we need is for the president of the United States to exercise his or her responsibility to actually control our borders and enforce our laws.
Part of it, I think, is transparency. You want to know what you're dealing with. And there has been people that have come forward that work on the border that have been told that they're not accurately reporting what's actually going on down there. Encounters and people that may be crossing the border. Is that true? Do we really think that the number is 7 million. Could the number actually be a lot higher than what's being reported because they're told to not report the full truth there?
It could be. Look, I mean, we have, in addition to the people who are being encountered, there are people that we know have entered the country illegally, but were not encountered. And those people we should be worried about for other reasons. Given the policies of this administration where people know that they're going to be released within a day or two after they're encountered, those people who take the extra effort and pay the smugglers the extra money to get in without being encountered, there's probably a good reason they're trying to evade or elude apprehension on their way into the United States. These are people who probably have criminal records, possibly connections to terror groups around the world. So, look, I mean, we obviously don't know the exact number, but even if it's just 7 million people who've gotten in, that is still a huge number of people, and it is having a profound effect on the lives of many Americans.
Yeah, it's hard to only, to use that word only in front of 7 million, because that is a lot. And I think what we run into is there's other resources that have been pushed up because of this. And I've heard people say one of the big reasons we're having housing issues in the United States is because, well, there's limited amount of housing and you have an influx of, let's say, 7 million people that come into the country. They're going to have to live somewhere, which means the demand for housing is also going to rise. And when the supply is low, that's what makes, well, I don't know, landlords and homeowners and all these other people say, OK, if you want to live here, I guess the demand's higher. I'm going to have to charge you more for it, for the apartment complex, for the rental home, for anything else. Is that part of the reason why we're seeing a housing crisis right now? We can't keep up with demand of what's coming into the country.
Sure. We're admitting people faster than we can build houses, build apartment buildings here in this country. And again, you know, Congress has a lot of power to make laws and repeal laws. They cannot repeal the law of supply and demand. If you're going to have lots of people coming in, more people coming in than we can build new housing units, it is inevitably going to affect the price. And everybody ends up paying for that. And people are being priced out of home buying. They're even being priced out of reasonable rentals in many parts of the country. So it, at every level, it is having an effect on the American people, which is precisely why we have immigration laws in the first place. The immigration laws are not there to be mean to people and say, we don't want you to come here. They are there to protect the interest of the American people. Whether it's jobs, whether it's housing, whatever it is, the interest of the American public should be put first.
How would you grade this administration's policy, the Biden-Harris administration's immigration policy, if you had to do an A through F grade?
It's been a disaster to the American public. You know, it's interesting. What is happening is not happening because of incompetence. This was the policy of the administration. They wanted to flood the country with lots of illegal aliens because they understand once they're here, it's very difficult to remove them. So, you know, in one respect, they have succeeded in this policy, but it has come at a huge cost to the American public and the interest of the American people. So it has been an absolute disaster. I'll give it an F if I have to give it a grade. But it is something that has happened. It's deliberate. This, as I said, is not an accident. It's not incompetence. This is probably their most successful policy, and it's ended up undermining the interests of the American people.
And it's hard to get lower than a grade F, but hypothetically, let's say a Kamala Harris is in office, and what you've seen so far, I know it's kind of hard to find her policies because they're hidden or they're just not said out loud. But hypothetically, let's say there is a Harris administration and her policies are enacted. Does it stay enough? Does it get better? Does it get worse? What do you think would happen there?
Well, you know, it's hard to predict, but something interesting happened a few weeks ago where the Biden-Harris administration decided to give parole in place to the spouses and stepchildren of American citizens. These are illegal alien spouses and stepchildren. And again, I mean, they've been abusing the power of parole throughout this administration. This was the next step. It's essentially an amnesty without any legislation for more than 500,000 people. If they can get away with this, this is kind of a cat's paw. You know, if they can do for this group of people, they may decide in a future administration that they can simply grant parole to any illegal alien who's in the country and put them on a pathway to citizenship without ever having Congress act on this. And that's kind of the scary thing, is that we can have an administration at some point decide, you know what, we don't need Congress. We're simply going to decide on our own to grant amnesty to everybody.
Mm, very scary. Now, by the way, if people wanted to see your organization, learn about it, where can they go?
They can go to the website, which is fairus.org. That's FAIRUS.org, fairus.org.
Fairus.org. That's scary. I mean, when you hear about words like amnesty, and we had this immigration bill, and here's what you see, and maybe I'm miscategorizing this immigration bill because they say, oh, there were Republicans on board for this. How could they sink this immigration bill? But when you look into it, there is these thresholds that would allow for millions of illegal immigrants to come in. That threshold should actually, when you're talking about illegal immigration, be zero, should be what's tolerable. But then you start talking about amnesty and some of these other things that are allowed for it. You think to yourself, who would vote for something like this? So there was a lot of controversy around that bill when it came up, and like, oh, how dare those Republicans stop this bill? But there was a lot of bad things in it.
Oh, it was a terrible bill. And, you know, it was bipartisan only in the sense that it had the support of Mitch McConnell and James Lankford, who we put up there to shepherd this bill. It was a disaster from the very beginning. It would do nothing to secure our borders. In fact, it would sort of regularize illegal immigration into the United States. It permitted huge numbers of people to come into the United States, and it simply would not have served the interest of the American public. So, Kamala Harris and others are trying to say, oh, it was Donald Trump who told everybody to stop to oppose it. In fact, most members of Congress, most Republican members of Congress, looked at this thing and decided it was terrible and that they weren't going to vote for it on their own.
And they used that line, this propaganda over and over again. Oh, Donald Trump sunk this bill. Oh, those Republicans, it's their fault we're having issues at the southern border right now, as in to blame the 3+ years of the Biden administration on Republicans for not voting for a terrible bill. It's a lousy political move that I don't think people are buying. And the severity of the border cannot go understated. The economy is not great. The border's terrible. I mean, there's some really tough things that the country's going through right now that we can't forget. We're under the watch of the Biden and Kamala Harris administration. All right, Ira Melman, fairus.org. You can find the Federation of American Immigration Reform right there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk. To the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Ryan Recker, and you can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, if you want to do a quick look up there. Always good to be back, by the way, onto the station and enjoying myself here. There was a realtor story, and I thought, I'm going to have to bring this up to Sue, because apparently P. Diddy is trying to sell his mansion. $50 million is the price tag. Now, Sue, I'm normally, sure if you're a realtor and you sell a $50 million home, what would your commission be on that?
I do not know. I have not sold a $50 million house. I will have to do that on my phone and come up with the answer for you. But I will tell you that the commission percentage goes down the higher the price of the house.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, I mean, I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I mean, is the amount of work you do on a $50 million home different than the amount of work you do on a $1 million home?
Well, again, I have not sold a $50 million house.
So it's hard to tell. Okay, so, you don't know until
but
you do.
I guess the answer would be yes. Obviously, it's going to be more to take pictures. It's going to be more of an expense to go through all those rooms and make sure they're in good shape and here's what has to be done. Here's what should be done before we put it on the market. So, yeah, I think it probably would be more work.
Yeah, and I'm looking at an aerial shot of this home. It looks like there's about a dozen AC units on the roof.
Probably.
I mean, I could imagine with a home that size, you would need something like that. So he's trying to sell it for $50 million, and TMZ caught up with a guy that's $1 million listing. I guess that's a TV show.
It is.
And he He's talking about selling. He says, this is going to be a tough sell. You better bring a black light. Oh, so gross. You've heard some of the things that went on into this mansion, right?
Well, yeah, it's not remotely entertaining.
No, it's terrible. But yep. There's another thing, too. Like, when they went in to raid the place, they found 1,000 bottles of baby oil, among other things. Drugs, violence, indications of problems, disturbing things allegedly inside of this home. So let me just say, Sue, you're called. You want to kind of get an idea of the home. A potential client called you and said, hey, I want to sell this home. Would you come take a look? Tell me what you think I should list it for. You think this will be great. It's a nice $1 million home, nice commission. Everything's great. You open it up and you go in and there's 1,000 bottles of baby oil in one of the rooms. What do you do?
Well, the story is out, right? So the person who is listing this, I'm sure, has heard it and knows what's going on and probably had, well, I would have an issue going in and listing that because everybody knows it's a news story and it's going to be a challenge to begin with.
Yeah, a lot of looky-loos, I'm guessing. I don't know how you would stop them from coming in, the ones that just want to see it. Well, I've heard instances where they ask you to put, like, I don't know, not a down payment, but they almost like pre-register you to make sure you're even eligible for a home like that, so you're not just a looky-loo.
Well, yeah, you'd have to get an agent, obviously, and nobody in that house is going to have an open house. So you've got to have an agent, and sometimes other agents will say you have to be pre-approved or proof of funds before you can go through, which gets rid of a lot of the riffraff. Yeah.
That's true. I wonder if P. Diddy called it an open house. Like, there are some of these different allegations that went on in there, including things called freak-offs, described by prosecutors as elaborate and produced sex performances inside the home there. Now, let me just say this. Hypothetically, it is a $50 million property. People hear about what went on there. Is that instantly, okay, you're not going to get an asking price for this. They're going to expect a discount type of property?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Michael Jordan just sold his house in Chicago or outside Chicago, and it took years. And he dropped it by millions of dollars to get it finally sold. I think it took 8 years to sell. So this is not going to go flying off the market.
All right, what would be harder to sell, the P. Diddy home where they knew all of these terrible things went on, or like, let's say, a Manson home where there was murders? Like, is a murder house harder to sell than a P. Diddy home?
Are you really asking me that question?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to know, like, what's a bigger turnoff to buyers? Mass murder or, let's say, sexual allegations that went down, the crazy things like that?
I do not know. I do not. I want to stay as far away from that as possible. I don't know.
I know. And bring the black light. I think that's probably good advice. Overall, it seems like it's going to be a hard sell. But remember that one property here in St. Louis? Who was it, the rapper in St. Louis here that I can't think of his name right now. It's blanking. But
Nelly?
Yeah, his property was Nelly. His property was dilapidated, pretty much stripped clean, and they had a hardest time selling it, and it was on the most beautiful property. All right, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon, and we're not going to talk P. Diddy anymore. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Always take away.